The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities,
celebrating 50 years of excellence.
In 1967, a new country came into being, or at least tried to. Biafra was a part of Nigeria, and its attempt at nationhood didn't last long. War, a blockade, and starvation led to more than a million deaths. And so, 2.5 years after declaring independence, Biafran leaders surrendered to the Nigerian army. All they had to show for it was this, a national anthem. The music this anthem's based on had been on quite a tour of the world by the time it arrived in West Africa. Along the way, it had acquired words and been transformed into a hymn, several hymns. But it began its life in a place as unlike tropical Africa as you're likely to find. You can figure out where from its title, Finlandia.
Finlandia is the sort of unofficial national anthem of Finland.
Finlandia was written by the country's greatest composer, Jean Sibelius, which doesn't sound like your typical Finnish name. More on that in a bit. And here's the tie-in with Biafra. When Sibelius wrote Finlandia, Finland wasn't yet a country. It was part of the Russian Empire, a grand duchy. Sibelius wrote Finlandia as a protest against that, a declaration of Finnish cultural identity. Finns fell in love with it. They're still in love with it. Most of them, anyway.
Whenever they show like old films of, you know, the World War II Finnish soldiers fighting the Russians, they had Finlandia in the background. It's sort of trite.
This is Sauli Pillay, by the way, born and raised in Finland. He's in his 30s, lives in the US now. He's not a big fan of Sibelius or Finlandia until late last year when he was back in Helsinki for a visit.
It was the 100-year anniversary of Finnish independence this December. And it was the Independence Day night, and it was right next to the harbor where, you know, they have the presidential castle and the city hall. And when I was waiting for the fireworks, they were playing Finlandia. And I was watching the fireworks, and I felt something. I felt like, wow, I actually did feel proud. Maybe I was just, you know, I've had a few drinks, and I felt some sentimental, but it was quite beautiful.
For many Finns, this music conveys the very essence of what it is to be Finnish, to live in a land of dark forests and hidden lakes and ice. But maybe it also just as strongly evokes the lush hills and humidity of Biafra. That may have been the genius of Jean Sibelius, to imbue his music with such a strong sense of place that two totally unrelated groups of people could lay claim to it. He had a dual nature in all kinds of ways. Like, his symphonies were both traditional and radical. Plus, he was a devoted husband and father who also nearly drank himself to death. And he spoke and corresponded with his wife in two languages, his native tongue and hers. And so it happens that their letters to each other are full of clues about how we communicate when we communicate bilingually, whether it's day-to-day chit-chat or our innermost feelings. So in the pod today, letters of bilingual love. In 1989, Helena Halmari came to the US from her native Finland to study. She's still here, a professor of linguistics now at Sam Houston State University in Texas, and a mother of three grown children. Her big academic obsession has always been bilingual communication, how people who speak two languages speak to each other in those languages.
And my own children, they were a big part of my research.
It can happen if you're the kids of academics. Nowadays, bilingualism is considered, by some people at least, to be a good thing. But it wasn't that way 25 years ago. People who spoke two languages interchangeably, they were thought of as deficient, not quite mastering either language.
I started looking at the grammar of putting two different grammars together, and are there any rules? Because some people said, oh, it's just random, and it was kind of frowned upon by some people.
Yeah, frowned upon. The grammar was maybe a little messed up or borrowed from the other language. The vocab too. Not a lot though, just a little.
That's what all bilinguals kind of naturally do when they communicate with other bilinguals.
For years, Helena researched what might be happening when bilinguals switched languages, whether there were rules to it, not just random patterns. And then in 2015, along came the 150th anniversary of the birth of Jean Sibelius, a big deal for any self-respecting Finn. Helena started reading about Sibelius and his wife Aino. His mother tongue was Swedish, hers Finnish. He was on the road a lot, so for much of their life together, they wrote to each other. And their correspondence was now available to the public.
I started thinking about Sibelius and Aino, and I started to think, this is what they were doing. They were doing what I've been studying all my life, and there are all these letters available.
Okay, so maybe you're wondering at this point, what's the big deal? Finnish, Swedish, those Nordic tongues, they're basically different versions of the same language, right? No. I ask Helena to say the same simple sentence in both languages. This sentence. I speak two languages, Swedish and Finnish. How would you say that?
In Swedish, it would be jag talar två språk, svenska och finska.
How would that be in Finnish?
Puhun kahta kieltä, suomea ja ruotsia.
Nope, nothing in common there.
Finnish and Swedish are not related at all.
Swedish is a Germanic language, with connections to most other European languages if you go back far enough. But not to Finnish. Finnish is related to Hungarian, Estonian, and some tiny language groups in Siberia. In Europe, it's kind of an outlier. Finland, the place, is an outlier too, a relatively young country. Before it was part of Russia, it was part of Sweden. That's why there have been Swedish speakers there, like the Sibelius family.
Swedish was the language of the upper class at that point.
Johann Sibelius, as he was originally called, was born in 1865. The name Sibelius was taken up by his great-grandfather. Giving your family a Latin-sounding name was a thing back then among the upwardly mobile. Johann swapped his first name for Jean, the French equivalent, at college. He spoke some Finnish. He'd attended a Finnish school for a while, but for the most part, he lived in a Swedish bubble. His future wife, Aino, also came from a Swedish-speaking family. But when her father married a Russian woman, they took the radical decision to raise their children in the Finnish language. Some Swedish families did this. Most didn't go that far. They just gave themselves Finnish names and learned a little of the language. The end game for all of them, though many didn't see it that way at the time, was Finnish independence. Aino's parents' patriotism rubbed off on her. She learned Swedish, but Finnish was her mother tongue, and she became a true believer.
Aino insisted on Finnish. She said, Finnish is so close to me, it's part of my heart.
She was 17 when she fell in love with the 22-year-old Jean. Almost immediately, they were apart. Finland was considered a cultural backwater. And to study music, Jean went to Berlin and Vienna. And so began the letters.
In the beginning of their correspondence, he says, I'm writing in Swedish so that I don't have to think about every single word.
His Finnish just wasn't that good. Aino's family were among the only Finnish speakers he mixed with.
He was nervous of making mistakes in front of Aino, I guess. He didn't want to make a fool out of himself.
But even as Jean shied away from written Finnish, he was starting to explore Finnish culture and incorporate it into his music. Like the language, Finnish culture had been considered lowbrow, some legends, folk songs, that kind of thing. But Sibelius was among a group of artists who are reevaluating those traditions and drawing on them for inspiration. This piece of music is from Sibelius's Four Legends of the Kalevala. The Kalevala is a series of centuries-old oral folk poems that were collected and published for the first time a few decades earlier. Sibelius was certainly doing his bit to help rebrand the Kalevala. These days, it's described as the Finnish national epic.
Olen niin onnellinen siitä, että luulet omaisesi tulevan minusta pitämään.
Here's Helena Halmari again, reading a letter that Aino wrote to Jean, all in Finnish, of course.
Mitähän he siihen arvelevat, kun minä olen niin suomalainen?
She is saying how it was Sunday and she was a little bit sad and down and she went out to just walk around and happened upon some children who were playing in the snow. And she heard that the children were speaking Finnish. She's at the time living in a Swedish-speaking area of Finland, so it was not a given that they would have been speaking Finnish, but they were, and she said she wanted to go and hug and kiss those children because she was so happy to hear her own language. And she finishes by saying, "It's so strange how wonderful it is to hear your own language."
It wasn't too long before Jean picked up the hint. In his letters to Aino, he started dropping Finnish phrases into his Swedish.
Finnish is it's a difficult language. It has a very rich case system.
Unlike English, unlike Swedish. So nouns, adjectives, and pronouns have different forms and spellings depending on their role in a sentence, which only feeds Jean's letter-writing anxieties.
And he's asking, are there mistakes here? And Aino answers in the next letter, Aino answers, everything is very fine, your Finnish is very fine. There were some extra dots on an A in one word.
And it should have just been an A without two dots.
Without the dots, yes. So Aino writes, those dots on the A were so cute that I had to kiss them several times.
Okay, if anyone suggests to you that Finns are passionless technocrats, just tell them that story. After Jean and Aino got married, they had six daughters. Finnish, of course, was the lingua franca at home. And home was a house in the country called Ainola.
And the name Ainola, is that named after her?
Yes, it is. It's Aino's place.
Aino wanted to raise the family away from Helsinki, Jean especially. All too often in the capital, he'd go on benders with his drinking pals. Things were calmer at Ainola. Today, Ainola is a museum owned by the Finnish government.
I went there in this past summer and I thought, how did it happen that I never came here? But when I was living in Finland, then it was kind of like, okay, I could go there anytime, but now I made a point of going there.
This is where Sibelius wrote many of his symphonies and where he finally became a fluent Finnish speaker.
There is a train stop called Ainola and it's in the middle of nowhere. You just see the fields, Finnish fields around it. And I got off the train there and I wasn't sure if I'm going to the right direction. And I asked this one local person, is this the road to Ainola? And he said, yes, it is, but you should go across that little hill there, because that's where Sibelius used to walk. So I went there and I looked at the sky and I looked at the pine trees against the skyline and I'm thinking this is the same place where he created his great music. This is where Aino was also walking with him. It was extremely emotional.
And as you say, pine trees, I mean,
yes.
Pine trees and lakes is what one thinks of as the Finnish landscape.
Yes, and you can kind of see them when you listen to Sibelius's music. I always remember when I was a little girl taking piano lessons and my teacher told me to close your eyes and listen to the music and imagine what you see. That's so clear in his music. Very, very clear. It comes from the nature.
In later years, in Jean's letters, he tries to start in Aino's favorite language, Finnish, but then goes back and forth. He tends to end in Swedish.
Helena searches through her photocopies of letters for an example.
Yes, let's see. Okay, here's from 1909. He's writing from Berlin. He starts in Finnish. He says, Rakas, elä peljästy, tulin Pariisissa kipeäksi kaulastani. Darling, don't be alarmed. I became ill in Paris of my throat. The climate, klimaatti is a word, it's kind of like a borrowed from Swedish into Finnish. And then he switches into Swedish saying, Genast satte jag av till Berlin, Frenkel.
And off he goes in Swedish. But why? Why flip languages? In this case, it seems it was a borrowed word. Sometimes it's something else, like when he gets onto the subject of music, something he initially studied in Swedish.
There seems to be some kind of a trigger, and this is what I'm looking at. Is there anything, any patterns, certain things he finds easier to say in Swedish? Also, there is this thing which we have been looking at as code-switching researchers, that there are certain things like you first tell a story and then you often switch the language, for instance, to evaluate that story.
The switching in the letters sometimes seems really arbitrary, like some new idea just popped into Jean's head and before you know it, he's writing in another language. But Helena says, don't be fooled.
There is some kind of a pattern to it. It's not totally random, even though looking at some of Jean's later letters to Aino, at first sight, it looks kind of random.
The letters eventually died out. Jean traveled less, and when he did, he used the phone more often. Something else had happened in that time. Finland had become a nation. It won independence after a grim war with Russia, followed by a civil war. In his later years, Sibelius was recognized by Finns as a kind of cultural hero in this young nation. And he increasingly showed off his Finnish, like in this interview on national radio. The interview was recorded at Ainola, one of the only recordings of his voice. Sibelius died in 1957, aged 91. He was given a state funeral.
Jean Sibelius jätti kansansa viidennen sinfoniansa sävel.
12 years later, Aino died. She was buried next to him in the grounds of Ainola. I've come to really admire Sibelius's music these past few months as I was putting together this podcast. I'd listened to very little of it before, but I have to confess, I still find it a mystery why he's so beloved by Finns. I think that when someone's linked to the destiny of a nation, the way Sibelius was, to its very birth, I think that that special relationship between the person and the people, I think it becomes a bit lost on outsiders. I get it without feeling it. So I was trying to figure out what his legacy is today, apart from his unwitting contribution to people who study code switching, and I came across this. This is a Finnish metal band called Stradivarius. The bassist and the writer of this song, he's called Lauri Pora. He's Sibelius's great-grandson. This little discovery of mine, thanks Google, blew me away. I didn't know what to make of it. I needed to ask Sauli about it. Sauli's the guy we heard from at the top of the pod. I wanted to ask him why a descendant of Finland's greatest composer would be a metalhead. Sauli gave me some context.
Heavy metal is completely mainstream in Finland.
Now, what do you mean by mainstream?
I mean, like, it's like, you know, they top the charts, you know, they are the most sold records.
Oh, when you say mainstream, I think of it like, you know, does it play in malls? And, you know, would the mall music of Finland be?
Maybe not malls, but you could, like, for example, this Christmas they had, we were watching, it was called Heavy Christmas, so it was all Christmas songs.
Okay, so popular. But what about the Sibelius connection?
I'm not a musician, but I think a lot of these metal bands, they take inspiration from classical music. So both are very complex. And, you know, metal bands are, it's about being able to master your instrument and playing very complex guitar solos. There is this sort of grandness. And it also, when it comes to Finnish metal, you can sort of see the connection to Finnish nature, the Finnish identity, sort of dark. In the same way that I listen, when I listen to Sibelius, I can sort of imagine, you know, the Finnish landscape. What we like, the myth of what does it mean to be Finnish, is being quiet and serious and dark.
Also warm and funny, like bone dry funny. But that's another story. And in case you wonder whether Sibelius' most popular piece of music has been given the metal treatment, I wondered. Yes, it has. I'm not going to play it here, but check YouTube for all kinds of different versions of Finlandia. Here's a more conventional one from a Finnish female choir called Taika. They're performing it flash mob style in a street. Big thanks today, of course, to Helena Halmari and Sauli Pillay. Also to Jody Gersh, Lauren Rothering, Mike Wilkins. Also to Hannah Selkokari at the Ainolo Museum. And to the Finnish Broadcasting Company for permission to use the audio of Sibelius. He was interviewed by Kalevi Kilpi. The orchestral music we use was performed by the Gothenburg Symphony Orchestra. Yes, a Swedish orchestra. Tina Toby is our engineer. And PRI's The World is our mothership. For photos of some of Jean and Aino's letters and a couple of fun videos, go to pri.org/language. Don't forget to spread the word about The World in Words by leaving a review of us wherever you listen. Big thank you to all who've done so. Best way to contact me is on Twitter, @PatriCox, PatriCox, or leave us a note at The World in Words Facebook page. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Celebrating 50 years of excellence.